You're listening to the All Things Good Sports Podcast, a product of All Things Good Company.
Hey, welcome to this episode of the ATG Sports Show. This is our first episode of the season four. I'm your host, Jeff Pulver, and I'm here with my co-host today, Caleb Rivera and John McClure. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Doing good. Just chilling and going through the work week. How have you guys been?
Oh, it's 90 degrees and sunny in Maine right now. I'm feeling real good.
Yeah, it's crazy day. Hot day.
So if you're listening on the podcast, we started the show out as audio only. And then we've slowly started to work in the video. We're doing a new video format this time. So we'll be on IGTV on our Instagram page, and we'll be on YouTube as well. So make sure you go check it out, because I think it's going to look pretty cool. And if you're watching on one of those other two video platforms, check us out on any podcast network. If you're listening in your car or at work or whatever, that's where we started this whole journey. So let's get it started. I will start with some headlines. So this week, we've got the NBA playoffs are rolling in the first round. The Lakers just tied it up last night as we're recording right now on Wednesday. Tied up the series. The Clippers fell behind 2-0 to the Mavericks. Those are some of the key ones. The Bucks are up 2-0 after Giannis gave them a big blowout win in the second game. And the same thing happened with the Nets and the Celtics. They barely squeaked by in the first one, and then the Nets really pulled apart. Those are some key series in the league. Baseball's going. You've got some tight race in the AL East and some other great races around the league. We just had the PGA Championship. Phil Mickelson became the oldest 50-year-old golfer to ever to win a major, which is crazy because now he actually qualifies for the Senior League, the Champions League, and he still won that major. They also just announced today that Phil Mickelson is going to be gearing up with Tom Brady to play Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers, just similar to their Tiger Woods tournament that they did. That'll be fun. That's happening in July. And without further ado, let's get into it. First thing we're going to talk about is the NBA play-in tournament. This happened for the first time ever this year. And from what I hear, it's very likely going to continue to happen in the future. They're going to have a vote on finalizing it in the offseason. So what happened is in the East Conference and the Western Conference, you had the 7 through 10 made this play-in tournament to get into the playoffs. 7 seed and 8 seed played each other for the 7 seed. And the 9th and 10th ranked teams played each other for the chance to play the loser of the other game. And that winner would get the 8 seed. So in the Eastern Conference, everything fell in place. The Celtics got the 7 seed. The Wizards won the 8 seed, just how it formatted in the beginning. But the Warriors had some tough luck. They were the 8th best team in the Western Conference, according to record. They barely lost to the Lakers on a crazy LeBron three-pointer, and then they lost in overtime to the Grizzlies in the next game, so they were eliminated even though they were in that 8 seed. So what I want to do is I want to go to Caleb and Jung here, and I want to get your two thoughts on the play-in tournament. Was it exciting to you? Do you want to see it going forward, and do you think it was a good idea? I'll start with Rico.
I kind of enjoy it because it really makes those fringe teams that are at 7 and 8 barely squeaking in have to work for their position, where in previous years, you know, it's the end of the season and maybe just a couple teams happen to slide in 7 or 8, but now it's really solidifying you. So if you're in 1 through 6, you've punched your ticket. You've definitely, I guess, earned your way into the playoffs. But if you're on the fringe on 7 and 8, now you have to work your way in. So I kind of like a little bit of competition getting to the playoffs. Plus it gives them a chance where they're the lower seeds to get the playoff atmosphere going a little bit earlier. So when they go in and play the 1 and 2 seed, they'll already have some playoff energy and be playing at a higher level instead of just going from the regular season as one of the worst seeds to playing the first and second best team in each conference. So I think it's a good idea, and it gets the playoff energy going and vibes a little bit earlier, and you start to see a little bit of more elevated competition earlier on.
I think I would like to see it continue too, and I'll go to Zhang in a second. But you brought up 7 and 8 seeds, but what was interesting is the 6 seed, that became a real spot to fight for. So those teams that were in the 5, 6, 7, 8, they were all fighting to avoid this tournament all to begin with, which was interesting because usually those teams are, you know, you're fighting for positioning, but this was like a real something that you had to work for. And then on the other hand, as far as reducing tanking, I mean, if you're at the real, real bottom, like the Thunder lost like 18 out of 20 games towards the end of the year. So those type of teams, they're still going to tank. But if you're in that 11 or 12 spot, normally you'd just be losing every game and throwing rookies and second year players out there to try to, you know, give it a solid effort, but still lose games. Those teams, those can actually try to make the playoffs now. And that'll be interesting. You know, hopefully that reduces the tanking and it improves the quality of the league. I'll go to Jean, get his thoughts on this next.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I was thinking too. I really do love the tournament just because you're actually playing for something. It's like, you know, it's like kind of like a playoffs before the playoffs. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of how the European Soccer League kind of works in regards to you have to play in for these positions and you have to really compete. So I, you know, like during the NBA season, it gets really mundane a lot of times where it's like you're playing 82 games. I know this season's a little bit shorter, but, you know, next year, you know, we'll be playing, you know, 80 or something games. And usually it gets pretty stale, you know, halfway through. And so, yeah, you know, like the worst thing that we can see in a league is tanking, right? And even though it makes sense for some teams, but, you know, as the viewer and as, you know, from a fan's perspective, you don't really want to see that ever. So it brings back a good sense of competition as well. And like you said, you know, like if you're in, like, for example, the 10th spot, you can still play in for the 9th spot. So I really do enjoy, you know, that aspect of it as well. So, you know, overall, I would like to see it continue. And I know the NBA talked about like a mid-season tournament. I don't really know how that's going to be formatted or how that's going to go. But I do love the idea of it because, like I said, 82 games a lot of times becomes really like, you know, it becomes a lot. And, you know, you can see in the play of some of the guys, you know, the players as well. They're like, you know, Wednesday night to Sacramento, you know, it's like they're not seriously, right?
And guys like Kawhi will sit and stuff like that, you know. And that's another interesting topic that that's really something that Adam Silver's been driving a lot at is this midseason tournament. And I wonder, you know, how far these guys will really try for this trophy that doesn't really have any historical standing. It's like, oh, I won. You know, how many rings do you have? Hey, how many midseason tournaments do you have, right? You know, like, are they going to take care of it that much? But, you know, these guys are real competitive, so it'll probably turn out to be pretty entertaining. And and you brought up the seeding, too. You're right. So if you get difference between 9 and 10 is home court in that play-in game. So that's actually pretty significant. If you're Grizzlies versus Charlotte, who gets to play at home, that can be a big factor. So we'll take a quick break, and when we come back after the break, we'll be talking about the NBA MVP and the NBA playoffs right now. All right, we're back, and we're going to be talking about the NBA MVP conversation. So the way they've been doing it the last couple of years is they're doing three finalists for every category. And first of all, shout out to Julius Randle, most improved player, and Jordan Clarkson just announced the sixth man of the year. And those are both guys.
Yes.
You know, growing up, I was pretty big Lakers fan. And those two players, I watched them even when the team was winning 20 games. So it's pretty cool to see them succeed now. Rico has been a pretty big, you know, hot and cold Knicks fan, but he's into the Knicks this year, so he likes Julius Randle. But anyway, so the three finalists for the MVP are Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, and Steph Curry. I'll start with Zhang on this one. I want to get your take on maybe who you think will win and who you think should win.
Yeah, I always think that the NBA MVP, it's kind of like it really doesn't go to a lot of times the best player, you know, on the court. It's like, how does Kobe Bryant have, you know, only one MVP? You know, like for me this season, you know, I love all three players. I love Embiid, I love Jokic, and I love Curry and what they brought to the court and what they brought to the team. You know, for me, you know, I think Steph Curry should be the MVP this year just because he, you know, I know he didn't make the playoffs, but the Warriors had nobody else besides Steph Curry, right? And so that man was on a tear of his own. And it's, it's amazing to see a player that small. Everyone knows he's going to shoot threes, and everyone knows that nobody on that team could really score besides Steph Curry. And he almost brought him to the playoffs, right? So for me, I would say Steph Curry gets the MVP this year, but knowing how the NBA operates, you know, Nikola Jokic had a wonderful season, you know, really happy for him, but he will probably win the trophy just because he hasn't won an MVP before, and Steph Curry has already won. So deserving wise, I think Steph Curry is deserving of the MVP, but I think Nikola Jokic will win the MVP.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Rico, what do you think?
Jung and I had talked about this probably about a month ago, and we were actually thinking about doing something about Steph Curry winning, forecasting a little bit. But I think I agree with both of you guys in the fact that Jokic will probably win it, but I also think that he has way more on his team to help him out than Steph, so I think Steph's more deserving as well. I think Embiid has played, obviously, a great season, and Steph shown himself that he is definitely a real top three candidate. But I think that Steph Curry is the most deserving. I think Jokic will win as well. So I think we're all in agreement there.
Yeah, and just to add to that, you know, when you look at historical, the way that MVP has been given out, as Jung was saying, is it usually goes to someone that's a one seed or a two seed in their conference, or at least in the top four upper playoff standings in their conference has shown out. And that's where Jokic and Embiid kind of come into the conversation. Then if you look statistically and you see, for example, they're all around Jokic and Embiid are around 28 points per game, and Curry is 32 points per game. And in Jokic, you look, he's got double-digit rebounds, and he's also, as a center, got eight assists. So if I'm looking at a stat sheet, I would probably say, oh, yeah, of course, Jokic would probably get it, right? And that's probably how they're going to score it and give it out. But just like if you go, like Jung said, if you go back to 2006 when Kobe was scoring, you know, 40 points per game for a whole month and throwing 81-point game and all that stuff on a team with kind of garbage players around him, that reminded me a lot of Steph in this season. And you got up for Kobe in 2006. That's when you turned the TV on for. And this year you turned the TV on for Steph Curry, and he was the guy that you could really get excited about watching that night in the middle of a regular season, because he was going to go for it every night and he was going to go off. And that, for me, who should win it, in my mind, I agree. That's why I think it's from Steph Curry, but it probably won't be. Okay, I guess let's move on to the NBA playoff conversation. So I'll start it out with the Lakers series, just because they are the defending champions. So they squeaked away a close one last night. It was about 3 minutes left, and the game was tied with the Suns. Chris Paul is hobbled a little bit. Anthony Davis had a big breakout game, 34 points, double-digit rebounds, 7 assists. And LeBron added in 23 points with some big shots. How do you two feel about the state of this team going forward, where they're 1-1, maybe in the series, but also what are their chances, you think, for repeating as champions right now? I'll start with Jung on this one.
Yeah, I think there's still a great chance that the Lakers, you know, come out of the West anyways. I wouldn't say like win the finals. But yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers fall into the situation where they play late into last year, into the playoffs, into the finals. And there wasn't much like rest time in between. And so the Lakers basically took, you know, most of this regular season off to just stay healthy. But a lot of times in the NBA, it's hard to turn it on and off, right? Because you're playing against other professionals. We understand how great LeBron can be. We understand how great AD can be. But, you know, it's just having that rust that they need to like work off a little bit is something that will be key in the series. So, you know, I definitely think that they can still win it. You know, my biggest thing with the Lakers right now is, you know, Andre Drummond, right? And this is what I'll say about Andre Drummond. Now, I don't think Andre Drummond, I don't think he's a bad player, but I don't think he's a good player at the same time, because when AD and Drummond play against each other, they occupy the same space almost, right? Yeah. So it doesn't make sense to have Drummond start in the starting lineup. But my thing with that is, if you're trying to win a championship, let's not protect Drummond's contract for next year, because if they bench Drummond next year or this playoff and shows how invaluable he is, you know, to the Lakers, then his contract situation won't be as good next year, and he probably won't get as much money. Mm-hmm. And there is at least for me anyways, there's no reason to start Andre Drummond in the starting lineup over Marc Gasol, because Marc Gasol can bring the three, can really stretch the floor, and allows AD to occupy that center space to do what he needs to do underneath while not having Drummond there. So I hope they can really figure that situation out, because that's going to be the toughest situation for the Lakers, is making sure they play the right players and not just playing certain players because they had a, you know, like agreement or something behind doors, you know, that they can't be benched. And that's just from my speculation anyway.
I've heard similar speculation that he signed with the expectation that he was going to be a starter. I personally understand that Drummond is a quad player, but I like what he brings to the table. He put up 15 and 12 rebounds last night, and he had a good game. First game was not so much. But that comes up to what happened in the playoffs last year. You have the regular season, you play with centers, and then small ball really has been a thing in the playoffs the last few years. And the Lakers were far and above their best when Anthony Davis was at the center and they had someone in this power forward, which I would say if Kuzma can step up, that would be their best lineup. But right now they're trying to balance. They're trying to balance Anthony Davis, Marc Gasol, Montrezl Harrell as well, Andre Drummond at the four centers, and they're trying to balance it every night. Everybody's got like a little bit of ego, right? I don't know how Andre Drummond would be with 12 minutes a game. I don't think he would do so well with that as far as his attitude for the game. But that's the dilemma that they have, is they had to pick up Andre Drummond when there was a lot of injuries this year and Anthony Davis was out and people were down and they needed a body. So they brought him in to try to win games and stay afloat. And now it's like, you got all these players in and it's like, he doesn't really fit the same way that he would on any other team. So my biggest concern for them would be LeBron's play at this point. And I'm not going to say that he's been bad, but if you look at the playing game, the two playoff games, he had that three-pointer that he hit, that he said he could barely see when he shot it, right? And that gave him 21 points in that game. He had 18 in the first game of this series, and he had 23 last night. And, you know, those are decent numbers, but that's not what LeBron James brings in the playoffs right now. So I'm wondering if he can get up to that 35, 40-point games that they're going to need at some point. And if he can't do that, can Anthony Davis do what he did last night consistently? And I think that's going to be the line. Can AD return from being a 21-point-per-game guy that he was this year to being a 30-point-per-game guy and kind of carry this team offensively? I think that's what might be what they need this time. Rico, what are your thoughts on their situation?
Well, I'm going to be very blunt about it because I've been watching too many Lakers games lately, and I got to say, I think that Andre Drummond should be sitting the bench, eating the pine, and not playing any minutes. I would not even give him 60 seconds on the court because of how bad he plays. You can look at the stats all you want, but when you watch the half-court offense or even on the fast break, Drummond is back at the other end of the court. He can't even get back to be part of the fast break. And in the half-court setting, he's literally just being a body, not moving at all, standing in the paint. And you cannot have that in today's era. When he gets the ball, it's complete isolation. This guy that's out of shape is trying to back down someone that's usually – smarter than him, literally just gives way, and then he runs on, or he does a stupid thing where he just lowers his shoulder into someone, offensive foul going the other way. He's doing nothing offensively to help the Lakers out. He's not rebounding the ball as much as a guy like that should be. This guy used to be a beast, and now he is worthless out there. Anthony Davis is the best player on the Lakers, and they need to rely on him to drop 30 a game and bring them to the promised land if they're going to repeat. Yeah. LeBron's getting old. We're seeing it. He's not able to play up to the level he used to. We can't expect over 20 points a game from him. He doesn't have it anymore. He gets tired. It's Anthony Davis' team, and everyone else needs to be riding with Anthony Davis. When his jumper's going, they win. When his post-game's going, they win. When he rebounds the ball, they win and gives them second chances. When he's getting alley-oops, when he's getting free throws, that is the best success for the Lakers. Feed the man the ball. Get Drummond on the bench. Montrezl Harrell, way less money, way better player.
Yeah, and Montrezl Harrell, he's a good sport.
He's a beast on the boards.
Yeah, Montrezl Harrell was a good sport this year because he came in off of 19 points per game last year, and they really reduced his role. And some nights he barely plays at all, which is it's got to be a tough pill to swallow for someone who's young and athletic like him. And one thing that Harrell, you know, he's not known for being the best defender, and he doesn't block any shots. But one thing I'm interested in is in the playoffs, all these guards, and the Suns are doing the series so far, they're looking for switches every time. So when Gasol is out there and when Drummond's out there, they switch. Cameron Payne, who played great last night, Chris Paul, when he's out there and healthy, and Devin Booker, they switch onto the big men every time. And then those guys are on skates trying to keep up with them. So it would be interesting to see what Harrell would do, or if Kuzma can actually get out there and get some buckets. He hasn't got much of a shot yet, but he hasn't done anything with his time. So we only have time to talk about one other series. So I want to bring up the Mavericks and the Clippers, because we were talking about this earlier today, and I know you two have different opinions on the series. So I'll start with Rico and then maybe bring things back to earth with Z. So let's start with Rico's thoughts on the series.
Oh, my gosh. Everyone is in a trance right now watching that series. You are watching two of the luckiest non-skilled victories by the Mavericks. You have a team that's going to be playing in the Western Conference Finals in the Clippers that is going to take them down in potentially four wins in a row right now. It doesn't matter if they lost at home. They have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. They're going to take them to the promised land. These guys are not going to lose again. Paul George has been here time and time again, and he's tired of not making a deep run. These guys are going to the finals.
With that as your opinion of the series, what do you think that they have to do to adjust on defense to guard Luka Doncic, or do you think he'll just be missing the shots that he's taking right now?
Well, I do agree with one thing we said the other day, and that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have taken a back seat to what they used to do in guarding the best player on the other team. So I think that one thing one of them should do in the locker room is say, you know, if we are who we say we are, one of us should not rely on Patrick Beverley, and one of us should take up. I mean, we have Kawhi Leonard with 7-foot wingspan that could easily be on Luka. And if he took a little bit seat to scoring, he could hold Luka to 15 points a game, no question. He would shut Luka down if he was face guarding him the entire game, because Kawhi Leonard is that man. He's one of the baddest defenders we've seen in the game, and he can shut guys down when he stops thinking about the offensive. So,
I think Patrick Beverley is a good defender.
I think he's a little bit older.
Yeah, but the size difference between Doncic and
Beverley. He doesn't have the wingspan.
And those two, you're talking about a two-time.
Luka shoots up here.
Yeah, you're talking about a two-time defensive player of the year. In Kawhi, and I think Paul George won one as well, or he was at least the finalist. So those guys, one of those guys to be guarding at all times. John, what are your thoughts on where the series goes? Do the Clippers have a shot, or is it?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think, you know, looking at both teams, right?
I'll start this out with Jung. Actually, was at the first game of the series, watched it live. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So I actually went to game one. It was an amazing game. So, you know, from what I've seen in the series, it's a difference between having a bunch of talented guys on a team and playing as a team, right? I think those are two different stories. We can look at so many different times, you know, not even in basketball, football, in every single sport, you have these super teams, and sometimes these super teams don't really work out because you have individual talent versus a team. And now when I look at, you know, a team like the Clippers, right, you have all the talent. You have Patrick Beverley, who can defend. You have Kawhi Leonard, which is one of the best players on both sides. PG, same thing. Serge Ibaka. These 1 through 5, the Clippers can defend, but somehow they can't stop the Clippers. Why? Because the Mavericks are playing as a team. Now, when you see a lot of these, you know, like when they make their plays, everything goes through Luka. So it's like when you watch Jokic play. Some people are athletic and some people are just good at basketball. You don't have to be the most athletic person to be good at basketball. And I think Luka Doncic is one of those guys that really can teach you how to play the game of basketball. If someone doubles, know when to throw it out. Know when to take your step back, know how to move in certain angles. And so because of that, you have the Clippers that can defend 1 through 5, and they don't know what to do with Luka Doncic because he's making the right plays every single time. He's getting guys like Tim Hardaway an open three. Finney Smith, who knows about Finney Smith, right? Yeah. But he's balling right now, right? 1 through 5, you cannot tell me the Mavericks have a more talented team than the Clippers. No, the Clippers have a more talented team. It's just that the Mavericks play as a unit. Same way as Dirk Nowitzki beating the Miami Heat, right? They're not more talented. Yes. They play as a team. They know when to pass, and they work hard. Now, when you look at the Clippers, who is a leader on the Clippers? Nobody. Kawhi Leonard leads on by example, by playing out there.
Play.
He's not getting He's not getting anyone motivated. He's not having those pep talks. He's not galvanizing the truth. We know.
Do you agree about Kawhi Leonard guarding Luka? Shut down.
I mean, he tried to guard him, but he did a step away, fade away, boom. And in today's basketball, it's not about face guarding someone, right? Because, for example, if Luka Doncic brings the ball up and Kawhi Leonard face guards him, you do the pick and roll. Either you swipe through or you do the pick and roll and switch. If you don't switch, Luka shoots, right? Because he's deadly enough to shoot from the three. So you have to switch every single time. And when you do switch, for example, you get Pat Beverly. He just posts him up. So with Luka Doncic, it depends on what you want to give him. He will make every single play of what you want to give him. If you want to double him, he'll pass it to the wide open guy. Yeah. Then they're making knockdown.
They have the one-on-one defenders in the LA Clippers that can stop him one-on-one. Defenders that can stop him. You can still do one-on-one and shut someone down. You just have to fight through the screen.
What I'm hearing is I think maybe Rajon Rondo, they picked him up and they're hoping maybe he can step up and be a vocal leader, kind of run the offense as a team. I know he usually he kind of dominates the ball when he has it, but he has that championship experience multiple times. And I know they brought him in for these types of moments. So maybe if he steps up, galvanizes them, because Paul George is kind of a quiet guy when it comes to this stuff. And Kawhi Leonard is kind of a quiet guy when it comes to this stuff. So I think maybe that could help. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about UFC with Caleb. And we're going to start talking about the UFC, and it's kind of another exciting thing. There's a big name in UFC that catches the eyes of the whole sports world when he gets a fight, and that's Conor McGregor. And there's going to be a McGregor fight with Dustin Poirier. Caleb, you want to give us some background on Poirier and his background leading up to this fight, how he got this big name matchup, and is there any sort of beef between these two?
So this is going to be definitely the fight of the year. Now you have Conor McGregor, who was the GQ wealthiest athlete of 2020, or 2021, actually, because he just sold his proper whiskey company for $150 million, plus $30 million he's already made fights from earlier in the year. Up to $180 million pretty on the year. So he's acting, as everyone knows, he's a businessman, and he's coming out here to prove that he's not only about he's still in fight. I think this fight really tells us if Conor McGregor has it anymore, or if this is just him making what he can left off of the money that's out there from his name to be made.
Like the Mayweather fight, right?
Back in 2014. Yeah, exactly. So he beat Dustin Poirier by knockout back in 2014. Obviously, he had his rise after that, did the boxing thing, and now he's like, all right, where's there more money again? So he realizes, all right, I'm up on this guy 1-0, and Dustin Poirier's like, I want another shot at him. Dustin Poirier comes back and knocks him out. So now they set up a trilogy, which is always big. You know, we had the John Jones DC one, had the Stipe DC one. Trilogies are all what fans want to see. Who's got the better against the other person? So on July 10th, we have the third fight between Conor McGregor, who's going to be 22-5, and Dustin Poirier, who will look to capture, I guess, a 2-1 victory against Conor.
So, and honestly, what weight class is this fight happening? Conor,
this is going to be a lightweight, so I believe it's going to be at 155 pounds. I believe that's correct. So, Conor's fought there many times before. It's a comfortable weight for him. Obviously, that's where your fight's at. So, I think it'd be a good match. Obviously, they've each knocked each other out once. We haven't really seen a lot of wrestling between the two, so prepare for a lot of striking and a full arena, obviously. As the last time they fought, I think it was COVID time, so it may have just been the Dubai, where they're just in a nice area, but not a lot of fans. So the fans will be there to really rile up each side, and it should be electrifying, honestly, to say the least.
That's exciting.
And I also another thing to watch out for is that we've seen John Jones. He's been making the transition with his weight from light heavyweight up to, he's probably sitting around 250 to 260 now, which is something he's never done in his career. He's always been a 220s guy, and then he cut down to 205 fight time. So he's been working working with his trainer and working in the gym and his diet to make sure he's putting enough calories in and getting strong enough to really have that stamina at heavyweight, and also the strength that those guys have, because we know Stipe and Francis Ngannou are very physically strong. And, you know, John Jones has been, you know, pretty strong at light heavyweight, but when you make that step up, you got guys that are packing a serious punch. As we know, we've seen Brock Lesnar before. You guys have seen Francis. He's a scary man, and you don't want to get in there unless you have power to match their power. So he right now, he's just worried about getting his physical strength up there, and then he's going to get back into the heavy mixed martial arts part of it again. So right now, he's just focused on getting his weight up, and then he'll focus on – so we should be seeing a fight come out against Stipe or Francis probably within the next year, which would be pretty cool. If John Jones obviously can win it through two weight classes, that would be add to his resume.
When was his last belt fight? It's been a long time, right?
Yeah, it's definitely been over a year. It was just against one of those, you know, not really no names, but, you know, people that weren't really heard of challenging him. There was another guy after Anthony Smith. It was probably over a year and a half ago, but it was a pretty easy wins for him. That's why he got out of the division. Just said, here, you can have the belt. It's not really challenging for me anymore.
It's exciting to see him take that risk and take that challenge to go up a weight class. That's what really put McGregor on the map as a kind of an international superstar. And I know he was always a good fighter, but the fact that he went up and he became that double champ was what really brought him to that next level. And not that Jones needs to be on that next level, but if you've already accomplished what he has in his career and you're talking about the greatest of all time, and everybody puts him in the top three. If you want to separate yourself, this is the right thing to do, I think. So we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Zhang about this International Soccer Super League that will not happen. So we'll be right back. Back with our final segment here, and we're going to talk to Zhang here about this International Soccer Super League. I think it was 12 teams that were going to break from all the different leagues, form one league that they were going to get in every year without earning it. And it seemed like a pretty big money grab. So fans on Reddit and on all social media really fought back against it, and it's not going to happen anymore. So Zhang follows soccer pretty closely and knows quite a bit about this. So we're going to go to him and just let him take over on this. You want to inform everybody, Z?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like the biggest thing is, you know, looking at and understanding how, you know, soccer is played in Europe versus how the league is kind of set up here in the U.S. You know, it's set up very differently. You know, in the U.S., like, for example, you know, we can tank, you know, for example, the bottom teams, you know, if you're not going into playoffs, might as well just tank because there's no relegation, right? And in European soccer, there are relegation. Relegation is basically the bottom three teams from each league will go to a separate league, and the league underneath it will come up. It's essentially like for example, the Portland Sea Dogs can, you know, somehow make it into the MLB, right? And so that's kind of like how that is kind of set up. And the thing that we have to know here is that a lot of these owners from these different clubs are influenced, that are American influenced, right? So for example, you know, one of my favorite teams, Arsenal, is actually owned by Stan Kroenke, right? Which is the owner of the Los Angeles Rams, but also the owner of the Denver Nuggets as well. And he got all his money from Walmart, right? And so especially with Arsenal, you know, like we haven't been doing really, really well. And so usually how teams make money is making it into different tournaments. Now, Champions League is a tournament where the best teams from each league, for example, the English league, which is the Premier League, Series A, all these different leagues like the French league, Italian league, the top four teams from each one of those leagues would be able to compete in the Champions League and win a trophy. And if you qualify for Champions League, you get a certain amount of money where you can, in return, reinvest that money in buying better players, upgrading stadium, you know, et cetera. Now, with the Super League, you know, they wanted to take the competition out of it and just have a certain amount of teams that would just play one another because the revenue would be guaranteed. Now, Arsenal has been struggling, so we haven't been able to, you know, really get into Champions League. So we didn't have, we can't generate as much money as before. And so with a lot of these different leagues and different teams, their thought is, hey, let's just create a league and we'll get, you know, TV revenues. We don't have to really compete to really fight for these positions. So, and a lot of the fans were really against it because A, it takes a competition out. And with soccer, it's all about tradition, right? You do not stop a 100-year tradition to try to go make some more money because people grew up watching soccer, admiring, you know, winning the Champions League, you know, going there and really competing for it. And so it really took the competition out. And there was a lot of protests that happened, you know, throughout all the big teams like Arsenal, United. The only team that did not want to go into the Super League was Bayern Munich. And how what I really do love about the German League is that they play for their fans. And the owners know that they're playing for these fans. And so that was one of the main reasons why Bayern didn't do it, because Bayern and Dortmund as well set this example that this club is owned by the fans and not by the owners. The owners and the players play for the fans. And that's how soccer has always been. And so, you know, a lot of these teams have been protesting because of that, because they don't want them to take, you know, English football out of England. It's like, what happens when Man United is not actually playing in England anymore? Mm. They're an English football club, right?
Yeah.
And so you're taking away football from people who grew up watching it, grew up like, you know, let's go to the Champions League and let's, you know, keyword, earn it. They want to earn it and not want to be given out. And so huge protests against it. And I'm totally in agreement of it. And, you know, like, I'm glad that, you know, our voices, our fans' voices are actually being heard, because a lot of the times, you know, it feels like you don't. And, you know, I appreciate American League for its own thing. And I appreciate soccer and European soccer and how it's structured in its own way as well. And so I don't think that we should integrate European soccer and how it should be run to the US standard. So I'm all in agreement with the Super League and just, you know, canceling that.
Yeah, and I agree with you too. And this was fascinating to me because I haven't followed soccer as closely as you have. So I learned a lot from you talking about this. But I do know that John Henry has ownership stake in Liverpool, and I believe LeBron does too. And for basketball fans, it'd be kind of like taking the richest teams in the NBA, like the Knicks, the Lakers, the Nets, the Celtics, and saying, you know what, we're going to be the 16 teams in the playoffs. You guys can play your regular season, but we're just going to have locked in spots. So that's kind of one way that I see it. And one thing I want to close on with you, Z, is do you feel like this is a win for the people in this case?
I mean, I do think it's a win for the people. And I think it shows that, you know, us fans have integrity for the game, because, you know, sports is not meant to just generate money, even though it does generate a lot of money, right? And I think this is a good sign that, you know, that we can still hold the integrity of the game and still be play for the fans while, you know, these owners still make a little bit of money. So, you know, I'm happy, you know, that, you know, we got our voice and our voices was heard. And it shows that, you know, if we unite together as fans, you know, we can really, you know, do wonderful things.
Great. Well, I think that's how we're going to close out this this show here today. Hopefully you enjoyed the show and you listened and watched for more. Like I said, if you were listening this time, check us out on the video next time. Thanks to my co-host today for coming on. I want to give out one more shout out to Simone Biles. I think it was Yurchenko double pipe was the move she just pulled off. It's like double handspring into the vault and then a double or triple backflip. It was unreal. And it was the first time it had been attempted and completed in competition by a woman. And what was fascinating to me and kind of disappointing is that she got a lower score because it's so difficult that they don't feel that the move is safe. They think it's too dangerous, and it's the second time that's happened to her. So I think maybe their judging needs to be a little more nuanced to, like, okay, there is some amazing athletes out there that can make these moves. Let's not try to protect them by making dangerous moves lower score. That's my opinion. But shout out to her. That was amazing. And that's how we're going to close it out. So thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch up again real soon.